crack, brew crack, zip-a-doo-ba-doo-bum, brew crack.
All right, cool. Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Brew Crack. It's been a long time since we've had one of these. We've been busy with barley harvest. Things have been busy with our friends at Crosby Hops with hop harvest and getting things pelletized. But this is a brew crack we've been meaning to have for a long time. But like I said, people have been a bit busy. So today we have our good friend Pete Buskey on from Crosby Hops. Pete is the sales director for our good friends over there in Oregon. And today we're going to be talking about one of my favorite topics and a topic that I think all brewers should be well-versed in, and that's hop contracting. So we've got Pete, who is our resident expert in the topic, to guide us through this and the different facets of contracting hops, be it varieties or reasons to contract or the risks of contracting. So first of all, Pete, just historically in brewing, and I know when I got started in the craft beer industry, it seemed like the approach to production was you have your 3 to 5 core beers, and it was pretty easy to predict what you needed to contract because you may have had 5 or 6 hops across those 3 to 5 varieties. But it seems like that's kind of changing in the current beer market, and maybe the way people contract should change along with that. Can you talk to us a little bit about how innovation and demand and changing beer styles are affecting how people are contracting?
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Will. It's hop contracting is one of our favorite topics too. I guess it makes us hop nerds, but that's also why we love what we do. So it's really hard to predict the future. I don't think I have to tell anybody that. Forecasting is an art and a science, and it's a tough one. So, you know, it used to be, like you said, there were less SKUs, less recipes. Consumers were a little more consistent about what they actually wanted. Today, things change fast. So we always joke, the one thing we know about the hop market is that it'll be different tomorrow. So that's it's a fun dynamic. Now, when it comes to, you know, iterating and creating new recipes and new SKUs, it seems like almost every week, all of those require different hop combinations. The hops that you buy in 2022 may be completely different than the hops you buy in 2021. Definitely didn't used to be the case. So, you know, one of the things we look at is you got to just be consistent with what you do. You got to communicate as frequently as possible with your hop provider, build a good relationship. And I think everybody's got to acknowledge that to some extent, you know, hop contracts are going to change over time. And we're here to support customers' businesses. And a big part of that business that we need to support is new recipes, new innovations, and keeping the consumer interested. And that's something we're constantly balancing, sort of that idea of the future being hard to predict with the hop market and the reality that hops only do one thing, and that's make beer. So we're constantly towing that line and making sure we're being as flexible as possible to align to what our customers actually need.
So I know that we have a lot of customers that may say that we're too small to contract, or we don't know what we're going to need or how much volume we're going to need. Now, to the customer that says we're too small to contract and maybe new to contracting or may have gotten burned by in the past by suppliers, what are some of the benefits, the key focuses and upsides to contracting varieties?
Yeah, it's a great question. And you guys have some unique challenges, right? Here in the U.S., all the U.S. hops are grown here. So a lot of inventory, you know, any inventory that doesn't get exported remains in the U.S. So the spot market can be a little more robust here. Generally, for, you know, the U.K. or for Europe, only the hops that are contracted are actually going to get exported from the U.S. and brought into the country. Now, there are some situations where we know there's going to be significant spot demand, and I think each merchant makes their own decisions about what's actually going to be over there. So the primary benefit for a European craft brewer is surety of supply. So it's knowing that the varieties that you need that are critical to your business for your success for the next year or the year after that are actually going to be available. So that's really, you know, that's benefit number one. Benefit number two is pricing stability. So you know what your cost of goods are going to be for those beers you're going to make in 2022. Contract prices are not always less than spot. Spot fluctuates widely depending on availability and a number of different dynamics. So pricing stability is an important one. And then some consistency. So generally every merchant is going to do their absolute best to provide a consistent lot across the duration of that crop year for that contract. So if you want every batch of beer to be as consistent as possible, that's a nice benefit. If you're purchasing on the spot market, you might get lucky if you buy from the same merchant, you know, make a couple spot purchases in the short duration, you may get the same lot. It's more likely that, you know, that lot you buy in February is going to be a little different than the one you buy in April or the one you buy later in the year. So consistency is a big one. And then I think the relationship comes into it. You know, when there's a contract in place, we're kind of all working on the same team to make sure that everyone's successful. So we want to make sure that the right hops are on that contract. We want to make sure that we're communicating well about our expectations around whether that's the cash flow in the contract, meaning are you drawing it down in an appropriate time frame? Are you, you know, accruing massive storage charges, and is there anything we can do about that? Are we aligned on when final payment and final delivery need to happen to make sure that, you know, we're ready for next year's crop? All of those things come into the relationship, and it's bi-directional. It's not just the merchant telling the brewer what to do or vice versa. It's really a collaboration to make sure that those contracts are successful and the contracts are enabling a really good craft beer business rather than crippling a really good craft beer business.
And so it seems like a lot of, especially our smaller and mid-level brewers that we deal with, that I'm sure the you guys in the States experience the same thing, that people have a bunch of misconceptions about hop contracting based on things they've heard, or I guess myths about contracts. What are some of the things that we can potentially dispel to kind of ease people's worries about entering into a contract?
Yeah, I sort of mentioned one of them, and you know, it's commonly thought that, you know, contract pricing is always going to be less than spot pricing, and that's not true. There are occasions where it will. Actually, servicing a hop contract is more resource intensive for a merchant because there are storage costs, there are fulfillment costs. You know, you may be drawing down from that contract once a month or once every other month. There's we've got to have warehouses and people doing invoices and collecting payments. There's a lot that goes into that. There's also some risk when we commit hops to a contract. Well, we're betting that somebody's actually going to take those hops and make beer with them and then eventually pay for those hops. And generally, we've got a great community here and across the globe, craft brewers are a good community. But there are times where that's kind of complicated. So that's one of the reasons that contract pricing isn't always less than spot pricing. So that's one myth. Another myth is that contracts are not flexible. There can be some flexibility in contracts, and some of that comes down to you know, the relationship that you've got with your merchant or with the grower that you're working with. There are very few hop contract problems we can't solve with a few beers. But I will say the further in the past or the closer to the present those problems are, the harder they are to solve, right? So, you know, if you're coming in 2021 with a Crop 20 issue, that's going to be a tough one to solve because most merchants don't need additional Crop 20 inventory. And the easiest way to solve those problems is going to be to make beer, which is something a merchant can't do. If the problem is in the future, you know, you're predicting your marketing team just came to you and said, hey, guess what? We're not making XYZ brand anymore next year. Go figure it out. It's processed, pretty ready to ship. There are some times where, you know, particular merchants might have some opportunities to move those varieties, whether it's to different markets or different brewers. So, you know, you can solve some of those problems. If it's a future problem, if we're talking crop 22, you know, we're still 3 or 4 months from stringing those fields. We're still, 8 or 9 months from actually harvesting that crop. A lot of those problems can be solved, especially if they're not huge volumes, and especially if they're in varieties where there's significant demand. There's a big difference between a Mount Hood issue and a Strata issue, because Strata, you know, one is growing and one is sort of contracting. So hop contracts can be flexible, but a lot of it comes down to attacking that problem collaboratively and getting pretty creative and having conversations on a regular basis. And the sooner the better if you're predicting some type of issue. Merchants are not going to be able to solve every problem, And most of us prefer it if you know, customer comes with some ideas. Hey, I can't use these hops, but I need these ones. I don't need this crop 21 variety, but I could use some, you know, crop 19 or crop 20 of another variety. You know, there's a lot of different ways to get creative here. And like I said, you know, a couple beers always helps. So if you can have those conversations in person, jump on a Zoom call and come at it from a collaborative nature rather than like, hey, I don't need these hops and I don't know what to do. You know, there's a lot of different ways to attack that. So hop contracts do have some flexibility, and pricing is not always more advantageous, but it is stable. Trying to think here. I know we did put a really good blog post together. There's got to be one or two more that I'm spacing out on, but those are the two major ones.
Yeah, and I just want to jump in there and just reiterate what you said there, Pete, and how important the relationship is in talking about hop contracts, and how what you said is that it's a partnership, and that where the merchant is in it together with the brewer, and that relationship is important. And the more that both sides can nurture a meaningful relationship that's beyond transactional, I think the easier it is for all of us to figure out those solutions for people's problems.
Totally. There's one other thing, and you actually asked in your last question. So there is that misconception that hop contracts are only for very large breweries or large breweries. We contract hops with breweries down to, you know, 400, 500 barrels. What is that? 500, 600 hex, something like that. And, you know, those are a little bit different sort of arrangements. They're probably shorter term if you're a smaller brewery, you know, securing the hops that you need for crop 21, for brew year crop 2022. Maybe starting to think about crop 22 for brew year 2023 and getting those secured. So if you're a smaller brewery, absolutely still contract those hops a year or two out. Maybe don't worry too much about 3 or 4 years from now, because gosh, I mean, who knows? Maybe you're making a completely different product by then. Who knows? There might be completely different hops that we're using, crop 23, crop 24. So that would be the big difference, is just the timeline you're looking at, depending on the size of brewery you are.
Yeah, so like, I agree. Those are all the fantastic points of why people should contract. However, like there are risks of hop contracting, as we all know. I think everybody has at least one story of how they got burned in a hop contract. Somehow a skew went away, or they forecast wrong, or something. What are some of the key risk factors of contracting?
Yeah, it's you know, every time I think we've come up with all of the creative solutions to fixing contract problems, you know, we keep surprising ourselves and we come up with a new one. So there are some risks, right? A contract is a legal document. Contract law, I'm no legal expert, but contract law is pretty simple. It's also, it's been on the books for a really long time. I don't know when contract law originated, but it's not a new field, right? So, you know, if you're signing a legal document, kind of got to do what you say you're going to do. And you know, we take those pretty seriously. So number one, you're entering a legal agreement, no different than a lease for a tap room. You know, if you accidentally sign a lease that's too big, you didn't need that. I don't know square meters, but say 10,000 square feet here in the States, you only needed 4,000 square feet. Well, you're going to have some interesting conversations with that landlord, about that lease, right? So we've got a similar situation. We take contracts very seriously. They're extremely important to the business. There would not be hop farms if there weren't hop contracts. Hop farming is incredibly resource intensive, incredibly capital intensive, and there's a lot of risk involved. And again, we make one thing, and that's hops, and hops make one thing, and that's beer, with a couple of minor exceptions, but 99.5% probably of all hops going to beer. So That's the biggest thing, is like, don't just go into a hop contract signing willy-nilly and not really thinking about it, or thinking about terms, or thinking about how the cash flow impacts will be for your business. You got to take that pretty seriously. So the second risk is probably forecasting. Forecasting is really hard, and I mentioned it earlier. You know, if I asked Will, you know, how many computers does your company need in 3 years for all of your employees that you're going to have in 3 years? And you got to buy them right now. We're going to set the price right now. It's a hard question to answer. And we ask brewers to do that all the time. You know, how much beer are you going to make? What are those SKUs going to be? What varieties are you going to need? How much of those are you going to need? When are you going to need them? There's a lot of questions. So forecasting is tough. It's not a skill that everyone has. It's definitely a skill that can be developed though. And good communication in your company. You know, you might be a small brewery that is sort of a one man or one woman show. And you can kind of make all the calls. You don't have to have those conversations with sales and marketing and operations and kind of coordinate everybody because there is nobody to coordinate. That can make it a little bit simpler. If you're in a larger brewery, coordinating, getting on the same page, making sure you know what the plan is for next year, the year after that, making sure marketing's telling you that, oh, by the way, we're killing this SKU. You got to make sure you get that stuff right. So that's a risk. You sign a contract. You've got varieties secured for a plan that you didn't know changed. We see that quite often. Over-contracting can put you in a tough position, right? So if say you sign a contract and you've got, you know, it's awesome growth projections and everything is going killer. In the States, we saw this in 2016 and 2017 where everybody was ready to go. We're growing, you know, we've got projections that are growing at 50 or 100% a year. And then some things came to sort of a screeching halt. So if you've got a three-year contract and the volumes are going up by 50 or 100% a year and the market changes, you got a lot of hops you're going to have to burn through here. You might end up with hops that you're using for 5, 6, 7 years. And that's where we all had to get creative, especially here in the US market. So that's definitely a risk. Another risk, consumer tastes change. So the IPA that you're making in 2022, who knows what, you know, consumers are going to want, what hop varieties are going to be available in 2024. That's a tough one to forecast, right? And that could go either way, right? It could be you make something, everybody loves it, it's growing, it's growing, it's growing, and then it just totally falls off because the consumer moves on to something else. The alternative is you make something, you're not really sure how to predict how much of a hit it's going to be, and all of a sudden demand just takes off and you need a bunch more or something. So that's hard. And getting that right is definitely a risk because either way, if you don't have the raw materials you need to make that new recipe, it's going to be an impact to the business. And then another one, you know, I like to say if somebody's got a hop if somebody has too many hops on a 1 year contract, they're not really long on hops. They may have too many hops for that year, but they're going to be able to use those for 18 or 24 months and they're going to get through that. If they've got a pile of hops looking at them for crop 21, and then they got a bigger pile of hops looking at them for crop 22, and then an even bigger pile of hops looking at crop 23, that's a big problem. So it's that compounding effect of being wrong multiple years in a row. We frequently have customers that, you know, kind of take a gap year where it's like, all right, well, 2021, we got a little bit too much because things changed and COVID and yada, yada. We're going to take a little bit of a breather here in crop 22. Maybe we're only going to need 50% of the, you know, the volume that we thought we were going to need, but we're going to be back to, you know, our normal volumes in crop 23. So there's a lot of ways to fix that. And then the other risk is really not understanding the cash flow impact to the business. So as I mentioned before, you know, as growers, we're putting plants on the ground a year or 2 years before we actually are harvesting them. And then we're growing them out for season. And then the merchant is buying those bales, processing those hops, putting them into storage. You know, we've got a lot of cash tied up in all of this. Having it, ready for you to ship it's a lot of work and it's very capital intensive, very cash intensive. So making sure you understand how the mechanics of the contract actually work. I can't tell you the number of customers we have that, you know, maybe they don't properly communicate with finance or accounts payable about, hey, final payment's due on this contract in 30 days, you're going to get an invoice for, you know, 10,000 euro or something. If those conversations aren't happening and there's not a plan, you're not taking the hop contract terms into account with a cash flow forecast, you can get yourself upside down pretty quick. And those can be tough conversations because, by this time, even though crop 21 is just starting to kind of get ready to ship across the globe, we're already into next year, right? We're already making growing decisions for next year and ordering supplies and fertilizer and doing all of those things. So cash is a constant concern for every grower and merchant. And that's one of the reasons why, we have some conversations and why we have those final payment deadlines built into contracts.
Yeah, which then again makes it all that much more important to have that solid, ongoing, communicative relationship with your merchant and your sales rep to make sure that everybody knows when the final payment deadline is, if there are any issues approaching that final payment deadline, like make those known really early so that everybody can work together to come up with those solutions.
It's no different than any other relationship, right? With your parents, with your spouse.
We're not talking about my relationship with my parents. That's
talk about the issues early, man. Don't let those things fester and don't let
the
expectations gap get too big, right?
I've got 40 years worth of worth of that to make up for with my parents. But anyway, that's another story. I guess the big thing is I know a lot of brewers make the mistake of they see crop 21 and they contract for 100% of what they think they're going to need across every variety. And then they assume for crop 22 that they're going to grow by 20%. So they're going to contract 120% of what they think they're going to need for this year. And that may not be the most sustainable way to approach it. What's your advice as an expert in the field as to how people should approach those multi-year positions?
Yeah, it's a good question, and you know, so there's a number of different ways to look at it, right? So, one way we look at hop contracting, and I kind of joked earlier, the one thing we know for certain about the hop market, it's going to be different tomorrow. That means prices are going to fluctuate, right? And the best way we think to buy hops over time is buying some hops, say every 6 months or every 12 months, because the market's going to change and it's going to kind of go up and it's going to kind of go down. But over time, you're going to get a nice dollar cost averaging effect of your contract prices. The way we think of it is, you know, right now, a brewer is kind of looking at crop 22 and starting to think about crop 23, maybe crop 24 if they're a little bit bigger. As far as production and a little more stable on what their product mix is. The way we think about it is sort of a stair-step approach. So for those varieties you're highly confident you're going to need, maybe contract 75 to 100% of what you think you're going to use for that 2022 brew year 23 cycle. And I give a range there because varieties are different, right? Like if you use a variety and use a lot of it, but you only use it in one of your SKUs, I would be a little bit more cautious, right? So if you've got a, an Amarillo single hop pail and it's your 50% of your production and you have to have Amarillo for it, but who knows if it's 50% of your production 2 years out and you don't have any other use for Amarillo, well, be careful about contracting too much Amarillo. So as you're building your product mix, try to be using these varieties in multiple SKUs, so you got a little more stability there, right? So, if you've got a hop variety in four or five different SKUs, and you know roughly, what your production is going to be, and yeah, it might be this SKU might be up a little bit, and this SKU might be down. Well, then you can go a little bit closer to that 100% because you've got less risk on a particular recipe being successful, right? So that's a big key to it. So that's why I give a range of 75 to 100% for next crop year. For the following crop year, if you're a larger craft brewery, 50 to 75% to lock in, a reasonable price point. So you've got some predictability, you can do your budgeting, and you roughly know what your needs are going to be 3 or 4 years from now. You can lock in some pricing, get some volume on the books. The reality is those things are probably going to change. If you think back to what you were doing 3 years ago and then try to forecast out what 3 years from now looks like, a lot changes in 3 years. We've been in COVID for almost 2 years now. So that's sort of the way we think about it. And the larger the craft brewery, the more years you kind of keep in that stair step. 75 to 100% year one, 50 to 75% year two, and 25 or 50% year three, and then come back to it. You don't buy hops once every 3 years, right? It's not like, buying software or, buying a tank. You're in the hop market consistently. You always want to be gathering new information, talking to merchants, having the conversation with your account manager at whatever merchant you work with, and understanding and tweaking and tuning a little bit. Now, this doesn't have to happen every day, every week. That's not feasible. You got a lot of things going on. But you probably want to be looking at things about every 6 months. And at a worst case scenario, once every 12 months. And adding a little bit here, maybe you can get a little flexibility out a year or two in some other places. Just keep iterating on those contracts. And the more adjustments we make, the more likely we are to actually be aligned with what you really need a couple of years from now.
Right. No, like I mean, for example, I know I had a customer today come to me and say they are a little bit long on their Crop 22 Nelson, but they need a bit additional Crop 21 Centennial. And like having that conversation early, like really made that a little bit easier. And like evaluating those things, say every 6 months rather than once a year or even once every 9 months, like be proactive on it and reach out to whoever you're buying your hops from to have that conversation early.
Send beer before you make that call.
Hey,
too many hops. You know, a piece of beer shows up before that call. Right? You got a better chance of getting something done.
Or do it over a very nice dinner. Like a very nice
dinner. That works too.
Like, yeah, something like that. Now, there's generally, with most customers, there's one big conversation a year, and then everything else is every 3 to 6 months, smaller micro adjustments for this crop year, for next crop year. Like, what is the best time of the year to have that conversation? Like, hops go in the ground in March and April. They're harvested in August and September. When should people be having the crop year discussions?
Yeah, I'll go back to, it kind of depends on your size, right? The more beer you're making and the longer the business has been around, the more predictability there is probably in your business model. There's still a lot of things changing, but you got a little more predictability. I may have a audio issue here in a second that I'll have to adjust for, but I'll switch over to my headset. Timing wise, we like to look at sort of the post-harvest period. So, you know, let's talk in October, November, December, kind of right now where we're talking. Let's make some Crop 22 adjustments, top up those contracts, get them to where you want to be. And maybe think about topping up some Crop 23 and Crop 24 stuff. So now's a really good time to do it. The other time it's good to do it, certainly before, you know, we're making growing decisions in February and March. And generally, if we have hops in the ground, we want to string those hops and we want to grow those hops out because there is a cost to idling acreage. But you know, if we need to, because we're adjusting for, you know, reduced beer production and reduced hop demand due to COVID or something, you know, we'll make some different decisions and maybe we won't string as many hops. So we're making those decisions in February and March. So the more information you can give the hop industry by February and March, the better off we all are for the following crop year. And then leading up to harvest, you know, things change. I mean, this was a strange growing season in crop 21 here in the U.S. We had the heat dome effect. You know, we had some kind of haze effects that made harvest a little screwy in some areas. You know, make some more adjustments in June, July, August, as we get up to harvest, and you're getting a little bit more clarity on what the next year might look like for you. So those would be the two major time frames, would be like November, December, January, February, and then like July, August, as we're really leading up to harvest and sort of shoring up where all these hops are going to go. And get back to, hops only do one thing. They do it really well, but hops make beer and they need to go into beer. And if we don't know where the hops are going to go, we maybe won't take so much risk actually producing those hops. And I think this year you're going to see some of those effects. You know, there's a few varieties. It might be a little more difficult to find current crop year inventory on spot. There's probably still some older crop year inventory that we're still working through, but you know, it might not be crop 21 spots of every variety this year, and part of that's because the contracts weren't there.
Right, and then that brings me to something I really wanted to touch on, like how does contracting affect what farmers grow? I know the age old adage that farmers don't like to grow things they haven't already sold. How does contracting affect what varieties are going to be available?
Yeah, absolutely. It's the best tool we've got to understand what the market needs next year and the year after that, right? So hops, you know, they're a perennial, and we're constantly making acreage changes. So, you know, we're taking out one variety and putting in another variety. It feels like every year now almost. That didn't used to be the case. It used to be you put in a block of, whatever variety, and then you grew that block for 20 years and you signed 5-year grower contracts with the merchant. And that kind of was what it was. What we're finding, at least at Crosby Hop Farm, our estate-grown farm, every year, it's like, all right, what are we going to do with this 40 acres? We're going to take something out. We're going to put something else in. And what we're putting in is based on contract demand. And what we're taking out is based on lack of contract demand. We love growing Sterling. We don't get too much of it into the European market. You guys have got good access to a lot of great lager hops over there, but we love growing Sterling. We just, for crop 21, we just didn't have a lot of demand for that variety. So we ended up taking out, 15 or 20 acres, which Sterling, there's not that many acres of Sterling grown in the country anymore. So that's a pretty good chunk of the Sterling. We put in, we probably put in Strata or Eldorado or something where we have a little bit more signal that the market's really going to need that. So yeah, you're right. Farmers in general are pretty risk averse. And if we're going to put all those inputs in and labor into producing something, we got to be very confident that we've got a market for it. Now, there are times where we take a little bit more risk, right? There's some varieties that are growing that have a lot of momentum, and everyone knows what those are. The grower may speculatively plant some of those varieties and maybe not have the contracts 100% in place, but we're confident that people are building new beers around these varieties and that there's going to be a market, at least a spot market for those. So there are some times we'll take some risk, generally pretty risk averse, especially with something like hops, because if they don't go into beer, hops make really good compost or bonfires. They don't make much else. So, although I will say in the US now, we've got some really nice hop waters. We've got some great non-alcoholic options. So we are starting to find some alternative beverage uses for hops that are nice.
So now which variety should people contract? People don't necessarily need to contract every variety they're ever going to use, do they?
Yeah, it's a good point. And I would actually look at, I'd kind of group things by how important they are to your business. So yeah. If your business plan next year relies on, Citra, Amarillo, Idaho 7, and Strata, because 80% of your production and what you're committing to, go to that that retailer or that distributor requires those varieties, well, they're really important to your business and you want to have them on contract. If your business will materially change, if you don't have access to the right amount of a particular variety, contract it, especially in Europe. And I mentioned this earlier, only so many hops actually get exported from the US into the European market. We think about this when we're giving customers advice in the US, even though there might be a lot of Mittelfrüh and Hirschbrucker available on the global market, that doesn't mean a lot of it is going to speculatively be exported from Germany to the US. So let's make sure we have those German varieties contracted so that they're in the right place at the right time for you to make beer. You guys have a similar situation over there where only so many US hops are going to get exported and they're going to get exported all over the place. And some of those are going to come to Europe. And the best signal that all of the merchants have of how to get those hops in the right place, whether they're positioned at your warehouse or in Rotterdam at our warehouse or YCH in Belgium, we got to know. So make sure you contract the things that are really critical to your business. And you can kind of group those as like your A's, give them an A and say, these are 100% critical to my business and my business would change if I didn't have them. And then you've got sort of the in-between, right? These might be hops that are going into seasonal releases, things that might change. There's a little bit more murkiness from the sales and marketing team where they're like, yeah, that sounds cool. And I think we can sell it. And I think consumers want it. But, there's a little bit of hedging. That's where, you probably want to contract some, but be conservative on volumes. Don't go crazy and contract 100% of what the sales, I'm in sales. We're very optimistic. And I think everybody's got a story where they're, the sales and marketing team has told them the market is going to support, X demand. And the reality is 50% of X. So be a little cautious on some of those varieties sort of fit in the middle where they're not super critical to the business, but they're important. Just be a little cautious. And then there's a third category, which is more innovation. It's like, all right, well, we want to make new beers. And I know a lot of people are bored through COVID of just making those core, 4 or 5 SKUs. Let's get back to some innovation. These might be experimental varieties. These might be varieties that are early in their life cycle. There's not a lot of acreage. Be pretty conservative about those. Get them on the list. Get them contracted, maybe do some minimum type contracts and have them in the innovation and R&D pipeline. Maybe don't contract, you know, 500 kg or 1,000 kg of a hop variety you've never used before, and you're not sure where it's going to go. Maybe, you know, a few boxes to get started until you really find a place for it. So that's the way we think about it. It's really just about how critical it is to your business.
You know, just a couple more topics to touch on. And the first one is one of my favorite things to take part in, and that is selection. It's kind of one of the most exciting things a brewer can do is to be that hands-on with the material they're going to be using. How do brewers go about getting getting access to selection, so on and so forth?
Yeah, selection is a really exciting time of the season for us. It's also, there's a lot of moving parts. So, you know, when you're coming to selection or you're doing a remote selection, maybe have a little patience with your merchant, because I like the comparison I like to make is, you know, think about if you made all your beer for the year in a 6 month period or 6 week period, and every one of your distributors and every one of your customers wanted to come and learn how to make beer, how you make beer, and sample the beer and try it out and all that stuff. So you're not only all your productions going on, but also everyone wants to hang out and have fun and, you know, have late nights. And we love that stuff, but have a little bit of patience with us because we got a lot of moving parts during that time of year. So selection's awesome. We love putting the finished, not finished product, but the leaf product in front of brewers and getting feedback and, you know, understanding what people are really looking for. And, you know, some brewers are looking for, you know, particular attributes in Centennial, and maybe those are a little bit earlier in the picking window. Maybe they're a little later in the picking window. It really just depends on what they're looking for in their beer. So selection is really important. We love it. I will say we don't put hops out on a table for selection that we think no one would select. We're trying our best to have all good stuff out there. And sometimes selection is more about rejection, right? People are coming in and saying, hey, I don't want that because of high leaf and stem content, or, you know, they're looking for onion garlic, or they're looking for early pick sort of attributes. We try our best to not have any of those out there. Occasionally one sneaks in, but so selection is important. If you're a small brewer, I think merchant selection is probably more important if you're not going to hit those minimum requirements for selection, right? So our minimum for selection is around 1,000 kg per variety per crop year, which is a pretty good chunk of hops. And that's number one, is got to hit those selection minimums. The reason for those minimums, you know, we have pellet mills with batch sizes that we have to take into account. Every time we, you know, a customer selects things, there are SKU considerations there, the number of things we have to keep in stock and store. There's just a lot of moving parts when we start allocating like and processing specific inventory for specific customers. That's the reason for the minimums. Hop contracts don't guarantee access to selection, but hop contracts of a certain size can get you access to selection. I would encourage anyone of any size that you know has a business that's reliant on hops to come to the Pacific Northwest if you have the opportunity to. Come see Harvest, come to the, you know, our Harvest party. YCH does their Hop and Brew School, which we hear good things about. You know, go hang out in downtown Yakima, come to Portland and go to Wayfinder with us. Even if you don't have access to selection, still come to Harvest, because you're going to learn a heck of a lot about what it really takes to put really high quality product in those boxes that that you use to make those great beers.
You know, I guess the last big topic is there's a lot of people that sell hops. There's a lot of people in the market that sell hops, both in the States, in the UK, in Europe, all over the world. Like, people have a lot of choice as to who they buy from. What type of company, what should people be looking for in terms of who to partner with?
So it's a great question, Will. There's a lot of people that sell hops, certainly a heck of a lot more than there were 5 or 10 years ago. And, you know, the idea of selling hops directly to craft brewers is a new concept for Crosby. You know, we've been growing hops since 1900. We've only been selling directly to craft brewers for about the last 10 or 12 years. So that's come with the emergence of craft. So not only are there a lot more people that sell hops, there's actually a lot more people that buy hops around the world now than there used to be. You know, if you go back 30 or 40 years, there weren't that many breweries, and there just weren't that many purchasers. Now there's a heck of a lot more. So there can be a lot of noise in the market. You know, people love, there's something about hops that's a little bit addictive. And it seems like everybody wants to sell them and everybody wants to be part of the business. But there are some important things to think about. I think number one for us and for most of our customers is just to focus on quality. So You know, there's a difference between, you know, somebody that's a grower and a processor and a distributor, you know, and has really control of the entire value stream, versus somebody that's, you know, buying boxes from so-and-so in whatever country and sort of passing things along and, you know, marking them up a little bit and kind of sort of participating, but they're more of just a reseller. And I want to distinguish sort of what we do with you guys from what a normal sort of reseller relationship is. So that's number one. Look for quality. Look for somebody that's got control over the value stream. Somebody that actually knows what producing high quality hops is about, rather than just buying and selling some boxes. The other one, I look at a long-term partner. So I'd look at somebody that's been in the industry for a little bit, that's clearly committed to the business. You know, they've got a team. They've got some processing capabilities. They got some warehouse capabilities, and somebody that you know that you can work with for quite a long time. That's one of the things we value about you guys, and one of the things that, you know, our customers value about us and about what you guys do too. So definitely look for a long-term partner. If you find yourself switching hop merchants every year, just going to the lowest price, you're probably not going to get as much value out of that relationship over, you know, a 5 or 10 year span as you would if you're really committed to some relationships and really got to the nice part of doing business together, which is innovative and creative and problem solving and really working together on a long-term basis. The other one, you know, hops are a little bit weird, right? We've got public varieties and we've got private varieties, and you can get some varieties from some merchants and you can get other varieties from other merchants. So I'd look for somebody that's got a fairly diversified portfolio of varieties. You know, we're at Crosby, you know, we don't really play too much in the Citra, Mosaic, and Simcoe game. There's some very large hop merchants out there that do a good job with those varieties, and we respect what they do. Our focus is really on, you know, public varieties, really high quality Cascades, Centennial, and Chinook, and then private varieties that we have access to and that we partner with. So things like Strata and Eldorado and Amarillo and Idaho 7. Azaka, those types of things. So you want to evaluate kind of who's got access to what, and you want to you want people that have like real, I call it real access to those varieties. There's a lot of gray market stuff that happens in the hop business, buying and selling and moving things around from here to there and connecting the dots and whatever, and all that's really important. But the closer that merchant is to real, true access to the supply chain, even down to growing some of those hops, I think the better experience you're going to have. You know, this is true of any business-to-business relationship. When you're buying anything, whether you're buying tanks or you're buying, you know, malt or you're buying hops, you want to look for a partner that you're going to get a lot of value out of over time. So look for some expertise. You know, when you're talking to the sales rep, do you leave that conversation feeling like you know a little bit more, or do you feel like maybe they're holding something back and maybe not giving you all the information you need? You know. Work with partners that help you develop a new recipe. Work with partners that help you understand the hop market a little bit better. And there's a lot of really great options in the hop world that will do that. Yeah. And I think that's true of any supplier relationship. There should be more to it than just the dollars and cents and the trading of goods, right? So another one we take pretty seriously, and we expect from the people we buy things from, right? We buy a lot of things. We buy boxes and packaging and fertilizer and all kinds of things, is responsiveness. So, you know, when you send an email, I'll be back to you in a reasonable amount of time.
All right. Well, I got cut off in on my soapbox there. I had some technology difficulties, so I went with the old trusty here and plugged in. So, got some gamer headset and talk through the rest of the things we think are important and the things we try to do well, and we try to work with folks that also do them well. So, you know, responsiveness, I was kind of going off on that. Just, you know, is this somebody you want to do business with? Are they responsive? Are they responding to emails, voicemails, you know, in a timely fashion? That stuff's all really important. Ease of ordering, you know, when you're drawn down from a hop contract, you're probably ordering, you know, we've got customers in the US that order every week. In Europe, it's probably once a month or every other month. So, how easy is it to place those orders? Is there some type of portal, or is there, you know, a form, or, you know, how do you get those orders in, and how do they get turned around? Because that's the other piece, is, you know, how long does it take to get those orders out? So the orders are coming in, You know, is it a supplier that's able to get those orders out in a day or two for you? So you hit your dry hopping schedule. There's always an emergency. You know, sometimes you don't have the hops you need in your cooler, and you know, somebody that's moving fast and getting orders out, not only in a timely fashion, but also with some level of accuracy. That's an easy thing to forget about. And then ultimately, you know, we're a value driven company. We're a B Corp. We think about values a lot. For us, that's quality, innovation, community, and sustainability. You can see corporate value statements on the website, but is it the type of business that actually lives those values, right? Are they actually talking about them on a regular basis? Are they acting in a way that aligns with those values? And are those values that are important to you? It's okay. Like, a lot of customers want to find hops for the lowest price. And that's a perfectly reasonable thing to be optimizing for. We find it's really hard to provide the lowest prices and also do everything else right. So, you know, our prices can be a little bit higher, but we try to live aligned with our values and work with people that are aligned with similar values. So those are some of the things that we think about and the things we try to do well and that you may consider as important pieces of that decision process, because there are a lot of people out there that want to sell you hops.
Yeah, I think those are all fantastic points to hit on. And like, they're all areas that I know you guys try to excel in, and areas that we try to excel in. And that lines up perfectly. I mean, customer service can't go far enough in terms of the craft beer industry, I don't think. Well, I think that's about it. Like, I think we covered a lot of ground there from nuts to bolts all the way. Anything you want to add there, Pete?
No, I appreciate the time. Appreciate the partnership. You guys do a great job over there for us. And, you know, we work with folks that think like us and want to run businesses like us. And you guys have always done a great job of that. So
thank you.
We appreciate all the support. I'm looking forward to getting over to Europe again. It's been way too long. I'm not looking forward to that flight home. I always feel like I'm a little hungover on every flight home from
just
Europe.
Just a little bit, right?
I don't know why that is, right? But those are never like really super fun flights back to the East Coast. They're always a little bit
because painful. I think it's because our pints are bigger than your pints.
Oh yeah, that's probably the issue. Yeah, and they're a little more frequent too.
Those one pint curls really take it out of you.
But no, I love it over there. I can't wait to see you guys in Ireland and go visit the craft scene that's going on down in England, and see some of the cool stuff that's going on in the Netherlands or in Germany or in Spain or all over the place. Poland's got a great scene. I can't wait to see that. So I'm really looking forward to getting on a plane again, and especially getting on a plane that's flying over the Atlantic so that we can enjoy some beers and hopefully no scotch or whiskey, but you know, let's sneak in too.
I don't think that's going to be avoided, Pete. Well, yeah, well, thanks for joining us and all the information. I know that the people watching will love to hear all that and gain some insight to it. So thanks for your time.
Thanks, Will.